live from the launching pad in beautiful Sedona, Arizona. You're listening to Vortex Network News. I'm your host, Aurora Light. And today, we're going to talk about, you know, this reality about this Planet X underground shelters being built by the governments. And, you know, what's going on with all that? You know, we've interviewed a few people for the last few weeks concerning it. And, you know, it's so hard for most people to wrap their mind around that something like this is something they should take seriously and prepare for. We've got some clips here of some things that we're going to play. Sheldon Day put together a series of little clips. I think we're actually in one of the clips.
Yes, yes, we are.
And we're just going to comment on those clips today.
Mm-hmm.
And let you think about these things, folks.
Yeah, yeah. This is a sound clip that Sheldon Day put together, and it's called Death Star Soundbite.
Death Star Soundbite. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll start.
It's a warm, cozy name, isn't it? Death Star.
Something to cozy up to, huh?
Between now and 2013. The Earth will experience horrific cataclysms and at an ever-increasing pace. They will be the result of a large object, generically referred to as Planet X, and it will soon pass through the core of our solar system. This object was first observed in 1983 by NASA's Infrared Astronomical Satellite, more commonly known as IRAS, and was reported in the September 10th, 1984 edition of U.S. News and World Report.
Let's stop right there.
Yeah, this, by the way, is Marshall Masters.
Yeah, that sounds like Marshall, I was going to say. Yeah, he's got a very professional announcer's voice, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yes, he's been doing it for many years, I think, in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So, they reported this in U.S. World Report.
Uh-huh.
U.S. News and World Report.
Yeah.
And then what? Nothing.
Right, right, yeah. Well, you know, everything goes quiet. The thing is that, you know, when you hear reports like this, the initial reports report the facts, essentially. And then, you know, being of such a sensitive nature, it goes quiet afterwards.
Getting back to the latest news here.
Four. Many times the size of Earth. It is very large and dark and dusty, and will not be visible to the naked eye for a few years. When it does, it will appear in the sky like a smaller second sun before it leaves the core of our system. While man-made pollution does aggravate global warming, the inconvenient omission is really dealing with the interaction between the Sun and Planet X. You see, it is the Sun that is the principal engine of global warming. There are simply not enough resources to save everyone. In fact, most will be left to fend for themselves because our governments will have a higher agenda. That being, to ensure the survival of our species. Industrialized governments all across the globe are working feverishly to launch a vast fleet of solar observatories into space. Many of these satellites are already operational, and they will help our governments to sound the alarm in time for us to seek shelter from the deadly radiation of violent solar storms. Eventually, the time will come when those chosen to survive the coming cataclysm by our governments are spirited away into vast networks of subsea and subterranean survival arcs. So who will they be? There are the obvious choices, such as the military and those with political connections. Their primary role will be to help our government ensure its own continuity. A second goal, and equally urgent, will be the survival of our species. That need demands special survival profiles. Obvious survival profiles will be those of physicians and caregivers. To help us rebuild our world after Planet X passes, we'll need a next generation of intelligent, educated professionals and scientists of healthy breeding age. Most of these will not know they've been chosen until they are taken away from their loved ones. There will not be enough room nor resources to keep both them and their parents and grandparents alive. As painful as the separations will be, those who watch their loved ones being taken away will feel a genuine gladness in their hearts. Meanwhile, those chosen will come to feel the weighty burden of a new and profound responsibility. The brave ones will accept it. For those left to fend for ourselves, it will be panic as usual. We'll learn that rigid thinkers become fragile survivors. America's military might will be recalled from overseas posts and retasked to the business of maintaining martial law throughout the nation. There will be no guarantees for those chosen by their governments to survive, as well as for those left to fend for themselves. But there will be those who are prepared. They will plan their routes to safe havens long before the early signs of crisis become undeniable. Then, when the time comes, they will be prepared, and they will know how to act calmly and quickly. As they make their way to safety, they will join with like-minded others and form small survival groups, where service to others is the rule and not the exception. Eventually, Planet X will leave us in peace once again, and the steadfast few who have survived through a philosophy of service to others shall arise from the ruins. They will embrace this new future with humility, compassion, tolerance, and above all, love.
But I can tell you the U.S. government for the last 10 years have been on a crash shelter building program from coast to coast.
First person confirmation of.
Yeah, well, that was interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've heard this before, but we kind of want to drive it home to people that it's going to be rough going. I think if you're over the age of 35 or 40, I don't think they're going to take you downstairs
mm-hmm.
into their groovy little facility. It's probably going to be a underground facility made up, I'm picturing, of younger people who are of childbearing age.
Mm-hmm. In their 20s?
Probably more in their 20s, I think the majority would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people are also more programmed by the government, too. They've drank the Kool-Aid for so many years, you know.
That's right.
They're going to be a lot easier to get to fall in line, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there'll be many boomers along on the journey unless they're high ups. Very high.
First person confirmation of a secret government bunker program. The architect's claim is explosive.
Now, this is Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, this is Jesse Ventura here.
But it pales compared to what he reveals next.
How big is the largest one you know of, then, without saying where or when or who?
The largest one I know of is about 300,000 square feet. It is built by the government. It is located in the Midwest under a obvious government facility.
Back in June 11th, 1972, in the L.A. Times, the lead physicist for the RAND Corporation, he said that in 1972, the government had the technology to excavate tunnels across the United States and put maglev trains in that were capable of doing 10 to 14,000 miles an hour. Now, this is not science fiction. We have the capability to do it. These are U.S. patents by Los Alamos National Laboratories talking about thermal nuclear boring machines that melt through rock just like you're taking a knife through butter. People keep thinking rock is hard, you have to break it down. That's what we've been misled to believe when it comes to tunneling.
Mm.
So Jesse Ventura, he's been coming out on television and talking about a lot about this New World Order agenda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Has he done anything yet on the FEMA camp?
I don't know. He may have.
Huh. Because, you know, you have to wonder how deep he's able to go.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get to the cattle cars? that have the shackles in them for humans. The hundreds of them parked in New Mexico and Nevada that I've actually met people who have seen them, who have traveled by horseback and on foot to go see these things that are parked off of remote railways out there in New Mexico. There's hundreds of them. So you have to wonder, okay.
Yeah, he did get into the FEMA camps. There's a clip here.
Okay, let's go ahead and check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And see what Jesse's willing to reveal about these FEMA camps. Because it's a lot of people say, well, I don't have the money to do much. Well, I think that what little you can do is maybe go to the Goodwill, get yourself some heavy-duty clothes in case that something happens, you are without power. And they say we're going to scorch, but also they say we're also going to block out the sun and it could be cold, too. So there's two different takes on that.
I'm Phil Schneider. I worked 17 years for the United States government as a geologist and aerospace engineer as well as a structural engineer. I worked for such elusive occupations with Morrison Knudsen, Bechtel, Page & Page, Aerospatiale of France, and a host of other EG&G and a host of other Los Alamos laboratories. And like I said, I worked 17 years, co-invented methods of shape charge blasting as well as laser rock deflagration.
Shape charges.
Let's stop right there for a second. So this man is saying that he worked at Los Alamos for 17 years. Mm-hmm. He developed a way of tunneling.
Well, shape charging explosives. Directing the blast.
Oh. Well, I thought that was for the tunneling. No, with what else he was saying, that's what I got.
Which means rock is literally melted or powdered by a special maser-laser combination, and the residue of the rock underneath is applied as a coating, as a liquid coating, kind of like instant agate.
Right now, there are 131 active deep underground military bases in the United States. There's 1,477 of them worldwide. Each one has an average cost of $17 to $19 billion. Each one is built in the site. It'd take a year to 2 years to build each one. And now they're capable of building a couple of them a year with sophisticated methods.
Stop right there.
My colleague, Al Bielek, is...
Colleague Al Bielek?
Al Bielek?
God. Al Bielek, is he still around?
I don't know.
God. Anyway, Al's the one who talked about the Philadelphia experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've interviewed him numerous times in the past, and I just can't figure this guy out. Mm-hmm. If he's for real or what he is, you know. If he actually went through this time teleportation thing that he says he went through. Because you have to wonder, why the government just didn't take him out right afterwards if he did live through it. He said his mind was wiped and he didn't come back to him for years later what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But Al Bielek, he is an interesting person to quote for credibility.
Been on some of the high-speed railways, the magneto-leviton trains that connect all the deep underground military bases within the United States. He's been on a Mach 2 train and floats off of a single rail at a 3/4 inch off the rail and is what you'd call high-tech. We have nothing like this on the surface.
Well, I don't know. Was Al taken down? Can you lower
it? The public basically is.
Was Al taken down recently? I mean, it doesn't sound like. Doesn't sound like something that. I mean, he's been out of the. Al's been out of their control. Al Bielek's been lecturing at expos, like the Whole Life Expo, for now, what, 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Did he recently get a ride down there? I don't quite understand. Either he took the ride 30 years ago or 40 years ago, or I just don't know how credible this story is. I mean, really.
Basically has been totally lied to. We're considered stupid or even moronic in some cases. During the unbelievable part, I was involved in building another base inside of Dulce, New Mexico, which is Los Alamos Laboratory. Mm-hmm. It's a
everybody heard the
laboratory.
Dulce?
Heard the hum underneath the ground, too.
We built an underground facility, a better part of 3 cubic miles hollowed out underground. Then to the southwest of that, we were in the process of the early stages of building. We drilled 4 large tunnel-like holes. Some of them ran 2.5 miles under the surface. At that time, a number of the original wells or drilling machines that were used were at the rate of up 2 miles a day. It was fairly rapid.
Wow, that's something else. Yeah, that's amazing right there that they can do 2 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it did you hear them say about how it just totally dissipates the soil?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no problem with getting rid of those. Now, Michael came across one of those tunnels in Mount Shasta back in the 70s when he was hiking there. He came across this incredible tunnel that was all, it had been all marked off limits, do not, you know, and all this stuff, and do not enter off limits and all this stuff, but he went in there anyway. And it was like a clear, glassy walled tunnel.
Really?
Yeah. It was like done with no process we would recognize today.
Hmm.
And that was back in the 70s. Now, this is an extraterrestrial tunnel there in Mount Shasta that was ancient, Michael estimates. It was, they told him upstairs it was an old Atlantis tunnel.
Really?
Yeah, and the ships are seen going in and out of Mount Shasta all the time. Mm-hmm. We have many photographs of them. So just kind of like Sedona, where people see ships going in and out of the mountains here all the time. Too. You've got they must have their underground bases, the extraterrestrials, in these a lot of these mountain ranges and under the sea as well. So apparently our government is sharing space with the ETs these days.
Hmm.
Half of the 131 deep underground military bases are basic cities for them. Right underneath our feet is a macabre sight indeed.
Are you aware of this asteroid headed toward the Earth?
Yes, Nemesis is called Nemesis. It's a brown star. It's probably hollow. It's maybe not a star at all. It has a specific gravity of a little less than 2, 1.718 or something like that, which means it's extremely hollow and light. It has a mass of 10 times the size of Jupiter. It is so massive, it's dragging comets and meteoritic material with it, and space garbage and debris. It's dragging it at such a rate, just the debris encircling our solar system enough to destroy half the planets of it. So, yeah, it'll be a threat. It's headed for us right now. Supposedly it'll be here in 2052. Nobody knows.
2052.
Well. Well, that gives us some time to prepare, doesn't it? I don't think it's coming in 2052, or they wouldn't be rushing to do all these bases.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and pushing NASA and, you know, everyone towards Denver.
Who's this guy talking?
There's a huge rush towards Denver right now.
Who's talking right now?
John Moore? Is that him?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't recognize his voice.
But 2052.
Yeah, I think that is John Moore.
See, the thing is, folks, is that the reason why we think it's coming within a few years is, of course, the prophecy, biblical prophecy.
Right, okay, in Revelation.
Within a generation.
Right.
Is that we're going to see these huge, huge changes coming.
Yes, and the generation was 1948. Begins in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ends in 2018.
Right.
70 years is a generation in the Bible.
Exactly.
And so this is in Revelations of the Bible. It says that the children who are born then, 1948, mm-hmm. which is when the Jews returned home to Israel.
Right.
And it says when the Jews return home to Israel and the desert begins to bloom as though it were an oasis, that the children who are born then will usher in the beginning of the end.
There you go.
And that's when they start irrigating the desert with grapefruit and oranges there in Israel. And it was hailed as a miracle that they could grow tropical fruit in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that generation, that boomer generation.
Shall not pass.
Right. So that's 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you do the math,
right,
you know, that takes us out to 2018, tops, okay, and no further.
Right, and that sounds more right to me that it would be before then,
mm-hmm.
and why they're rushing to complete all these things.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be hustling.
The rush to Denver is what
it is. If they had 40 years, they wouldn't be speeding up the moves to Denver of the CIA,
mm-hmm.
the NSA. Everybody's cleared out of there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they all cleared out of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Because they're expecting the tsunamis and the earth changes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the, I don't know, predictions or psychics or... I heard something that Washington, D.C., just in a few years, is going to be completely underwater.
Well, anything's possible with the times we're living in,
mm-hmm.
with this Nebro or Planet X or whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's the only logical explanation.
For the revelations coming true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, because I've been reading that since I was a little girl and wondering how that was all going to play out. Now it's kind of here at our doorstep.
Right. Yeah, it's just a few years away, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows for certain, or we within closeness of the Earth, within 500 million miles, which is plenty close indeed.
We are now aware of a very large object that is coming into the solar system. And
this, by the way, is Jim McCanny.
Okay.
And there seems to be a historical recurrence of this object. Some people call it Nibiru, Planet X.
We know the governments are seeing it, but the question is for us, what are they seeing? Most likely this is a large object with a group of satellites, a mini constellation, but it could be a comet. It could just simply be a massive rock. It could be any number of things. What we do know is it is big, it has mass, and it has the ability to perturb the sun electrically. When this flyby happens, this is going to be a slow motion train wreck for a long time. You know, you're going to run out of those supplies, and it's going to be catch as catch can, and you're going to have to work together with other people to build survival communities.
I put there for a minute. Planet X is actually a spent.
All right. Can you back that up just a couple seconds? Yes, we are going to have to work together in communities. And isn't it about time, really? I mean, if we're at the point where we can put a man on the moon, or so to speak, why is it that we're not, our communities are so disenfranchised?
Well, that's because of the government.
They want to decentralize. We want to decentralize all this and get rid of the centralization. I think that's the main point of the expo, is to get people thinking independently and interdependently in their own communities.
Supposedly it'll be here in 2052. Nobody knows for certain, or it'll be within closeness of the Earth. Within 500 million miles, which is plenty close indeed.
Well, you know, I'd like to comment on all the increase in asteroids. I mean, that is...
Yeah, we're seeing more asteroid impacts.
Lots more.
Lots more.
And lots more earthquakes, yes. Yeah. So it's already... We're already feeling it.
We are now aware of a very large object that is coming into the solar system, and there seems to be a historical recurrence of this object. Some people call it Nibiru, Planet X.
Velikovsky called it Venus.
We know the governments are seeing it, but the question is for us, what are they seeing? Most likely this is a large object with a group of satellites, a mini constellation, but it could be a comet. It could just simply be a massive rock. It could be any number of things. What we do know is it is big. It has mass, and it has the ability to perturb the sun electrically. When this flyby happens, this is going to be a slow-motion train wreck for a long time. You know, you're going to run out of those supplies, and it's going to be catch-as-catch-can, and you're going to have to work together with other people to build survival communities.
Stop there. You know, when it catches, when he says it's going to be catch as catch can, you know, it makes you wonder what we can do, each one of us on local levels, if you thought about all your supply lines being cut off right now. We'd be in pretty bad shape, wouldn't we?
Come on. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know...
I mean, look around here, though. You know, our main artery here is I-17.
We got one road, basically, into town.
In and out, I-17.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, say that's jammed with cars that are stalled out from being in traffic too long, and all their gas is gone.
The closest highway is 87, and that comes up through Payson.
Right. So say they deliberately have closed down all these roads all over in the state parks and everything for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were planning this. Because they've known about it since the 80s, the early 80s.
Right.
So, you know, like Yellowstone Park, for example, and all the state parks and national parks, they've been closing down all these back roads all over Arizona. And now, nodding doesn't work on the radio. Don't nod to me anymore. So anyway, we've got back roads that are closed up. We've only got one major road. What would people do all over the world if supply lines were cut off? You have to think about that. And what would you do? I say we get busy now creating our own sustainable kind of green energy power in our communities, creating it in our homes as much as possible, and growing our own food and getting together community food banks for people, farms, community farms, turning vacant lots and stuff. With all this real estate disaster, there's a lot of vacant lots out there. They're never going to be sold for a long time.
Well, we're going to have all these homes sitting around here empty.
Yeah, that's what's happening already. You can imagine.
And then I just read a story here that the banks, they send in these thugs, okay, to kick people out of their homes, change their locks, turn off the power.
Yeah, cut all their power lines.
They leave.
Yeah, they cut all their power lines.
And so the homes sit there empty.
Right. And they kick the people out into the street.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people don't even, can't even, they say if you're being evicted from your home, to make them take you to court because they can't produce the mortgages. They don't have them.
Yeah.
They don't have the paper.
Well, the whole system's corrupt.
The paper's been so thrown about. So, you know, it's toxic paper.
Yeah. Well, Aurora, we're out of time. But
oh,
let's
my
pick this up during my show.
Well, okay, so we're going to talk about some chemtrails here on your show.
Well, we're going to pick this up on my show.
Okay.
You
and
know, this,
get into a little bit more
here
about this.
On Sheldon Day's
okay.
Wonderful piece here.
Yeah, he put together a really great piece. We want to thank Sheldon for all his diligent work he's done on this subject. And we, you know, wish him a lot of luck in the future, continuing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be, of course, keeping an eye on what's out there, folks, so that you can get the creme de la creme. Lots of blessings to everyone. Have a beautiful week. Stay tuned to the Progressive Tech Hour with Dr. Houdini.
Yes,
he's a wild man.
Coming up next on Vortex Network.
Lots of blessings to all.